This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. This week's episode was recorded on December 20th, 2015. On this week's episode, Paul Jaisley, James Hahn, and I, Mike Rappin, discussed comics we read last week and what books we're excited for this week. Our focus for the episode, though, was on the barely tangible idea of why do you keep reading a new comic? It's out there and tough to grasp, but we tried our hardest. I promise. And in case you didn't know, we're less than 2 weeks away from closing our listener survey on December 31st. So go to destroythesub.org/survey and take that. You can take the survey, get a free comic, and continue to be an awesome person. For extra credit, you can rate us 5 stars on iTunes, which is pretty much the best way to expose this show to more people. It'll bring us up in the listings, and more people will listen to the show. And now, this week's episode. This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I'm your host, Mike Rappin, editor-in-chief for Destroy the Cyborg. With me this week are two amazing human beings, James Hahn.
Hey.
And Paul Jaisley.
Hello.
How are you guys doing this week?
Fantastic, as always.
Excellent.
That's good to hear. That's awesome. How have comics been? You know, I ask that all the time, but you know, I gotta know. How have comics been for you?
I read a ton of great comics this week, so they've been quite good, Mike, as usual, as well.
Good to hear. Good to hear.
Probably the one I was most delighted by, I have to say, was Batman 66, number 30. Normally, I picked this series up digitally. It's the weekly series that Jeff Parker and rotating artists have done on Comixology. Yeah. But this was the final issue of it, and I decided to pick it up physically, the physical copy of it, because all of the artwork, both the cover and the interiors, were done by Mike Allred,
ooh,
who I'm a noted fan of. Yep. And anytime you get him drawing Adam West Batman, I can't get enough of that. So
he's been doing the covers for that series, right?
Yeah, he's been doing the covers, but this was a whole issue of his work.
Nice.
And it was actually written by his brother, Lee Allred, instead of Jeff Parker, which was kind of interesting.
Okay. Hmm.
But the whole issue, the 20 pages, was basically a story of how the opening credits for the TV show came to be. So it's
what?
Yeah, so all of the villains from the TV show have like this convention at a film studio where they're showing off all of their, you know, death traps and stuff, and Batman and Robin busted up, and like there's a sequence in the last few pages where the panels are basically the opening sequence from the TV show laid out. Hmm. And it's all been filmed since it's at a TV studio. So it's like the story of the opening credits of the TV show. That's the kind of stuff I love, because I can't get enough of that TV show. So it was a lot of fun. If you have any interest, if you like Mike Allred, obviously you should check it out. If you have any interest in Batman 66, the TV show, the Adam West stuff, like I do, it was kind of a perfect comic book version of that.
Oh, man, that's fantastic.
Sounds pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Well worth checking out.
Did you read anything else this week?
Justice League 46, again, another fantastic issue in the Dark Side War. Amazing art by Francis Manapul. Dark Quarter, number 5, by Rich Tomasso. I raved about the first 4 issues on the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
Issue 5 was just as good. Judge Dredd, number 1, which was my pick on the last episode as well.
Yeah.
I thought it was fantastic. I highly recommend it. If you're trying to get into Judge Dredd and you don't have the patience to dig through 30 years worth of back stuff, I thought this was a great introduction to the character. And finally, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, number 1. Kind of another all-ages book from Marvel based on a really obscure Jack Kirby character, Devil Dinosaur.
Oh, yeah.
A very, very good comic. Not quite my cup of tea. I'm sure this is going to be someone's favorite comic because it's really good. I don't think I'm going to stick with it, though, but it was still enjoyable.
Is it just like the all-ages thing that kind of like made it not so great, or was it just maybe not your thing in general?
It's just kind of not my thing in general. I mean, okay. I have no problem with all-ages books. And like I said, it's a very well-written comic. I like the art a lot, but I'm trying to watch my budget, and it's not quite good enough for me to keep going as far as I'm concerned. But I'm sure other people will love it. So
gotcha.
What about you guys? James, what did you read?
Well, the short list, I would say, is my top pick from the last week would be Cognetic, which is a story by James Tynion IV, who's now my favorite writer.
That guy.
So I don't know if you guys know much about this book, but basically the premise is there were a group of like 5 or 6 cavemen way, way, way back who saw an alien spaceship crash out of the sky. They go over there and then they eat the alien's brain. I don't remember.
Like you do.
You know, like you do.
Yeah.
And this basically enabled them to control large groups of people, like entire cultures. Like they kind of insert their consciousness into the humans, and then They basically shape cultures through this way, and that's supposedly how civilization has come to be. Through these people, like, shaping people's decisions and stuff. So this one, now it's, like, modern day. This, the main, like, bad one, I suppose, has come back, and he takes over, like, an entire skyscraper's worth of people, and they turn into, like, basically a huge, like, Megazord-sized thing that's just people holding onto each other, all controlled by the same consciousness. Wow. So yeah, it's a pretty intense story.
I had never heard of this book. I think you had mentioned on like one of the weekly pull lists, and I was like, how did this book just fall under my radar? Like, I was really surprised, especially because it's James Tynion. Like, you'd think, I mean, he's a pretty big-sized name at this point. I mean, all the work that he's done on his DC books.
Right.
I mean, but yeah, this sounds wild. Like, is this an Image book or is it Vertigo? Or
I believe it's Vertigo, because I picked it up the same week as Clean Room came out. I picked both of those number ones up.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I'd highly recommend it. It's only three issues long. Really good.
Sorry, I just looked it up. It looks like it's Boom.
Oh, it's Boom Studios. Studios. Yeah. Gotcha.
Man, you said it's only a 3-issue miniseries then?
Yeah, it's over now.
Oh, I definitely will have to grab this. That sounds insane.
It sounds really cool.
It gets pretty intense because, well, I'll let you read it. But there's kind of a love interest that happens with one of the people who has, like, infinite personalities, kind of, you know, falls in love with, like, a mortal, and it's crazy.
This isn't... No, man. You gotta just let me read this. What else did you read, though?
Clause number 2, Grant Morrison, excellent. Not a cheesy little Christmas story or anything. I think it's, like, a really cool story about Santa Claus. Harrow County number 8 is kind of... The two, like, twins are finally starting to confront each other. That one was really good. Constantine number 7, excellent as always. My man, James Tynion, laying it down.
Oh, I cannot speak to that book. Oh my gosh, I love that book too much.
Yeah, Swamp Thing comes out in this issue, and obviously I'm a huge Swamp Thing fan.
Mm-hmm.
And then Paper Girls number 3, which was... a very interesting issue, and this is shaping up to be, like, one of my favorite Image books. It's just amazing. Like, if you like the Goonies or anything like that, you should definitely be reading Paper Girls.
I agree.
That book is utterly insane. I've never read a book where I've constantly been just worried about what weird direction they're going to go with it yet next. Like, oh, it's so bizarre.
Yeah.
Anyways, but... What I read this past week, I didn't read anything since my girlfriend just recently moved in, and I've just been dead to the world as far as comics go, just as we've been unpacking and doing all sorts of different holiday things. But nonetheless, I did manage to sit down last night and read a couple books, a couple number ones that I read. I read Nightburgers number 1, which is a strange anthology book that's out on Comixology, and I think the guy who organized the entire thing, his name is Harris Smith. He got some print copies done, and I grabbed a digital copy of it. It's interesting. It reminded me a lot of Super Jail, if you guys ever watched that show.
Just
kind of out there, insane, like very vivid, beautiful, like neon colors. It's really like I can punk rock zine is what it feels like.
Sure.
So it's on Comixology. It's pretty good. I read Weird World number 1 after I saw so much praise for it on Twitter, and it was exactly as the title would describe. Very weird. I don't know what else to say with it. I mean, Mike Del Mundo on art and Sam Humphries writing. I might check out number 2. I'm like really on the edge about it though. I read Invincible 26, which was my pick last week. It was the end of this issue alleviates any worry that I had about this book being strange and out there and, like, Kirkman breaking the world. Instead, like, it's only gotten 1,000 times better. How does this book keep doing it? I read Wicked and Divine number 17, which was another issue of this weird arc where there's no focus. It's just like focusing on individual characters, and the art for this specific issue was not my cup of tea.
The story
was good. And that's the thing. I feel like a lot of people might feel the same way, despite how much praise I think the artist for that book, what's his name, Brandon Graham, no, different person.
No.
Anyways, so But nonetheless, I'm still reading Wiccan and Devise. That was an off issue. But the one that I was really excited for and like I am so still torn on is All New X-Men number 2. Oh, you guys, Dennis Hopeless and Mark Bagley. And to me, the entire issue I'm reading All New X-Men number 2. And if you don't know anything about All New X-Men, as I've said before, you kind of got to go back and reread a bunch of old stuff to figure out how we've gotten here. But at the same time, it's like all new, all different. You could really jump in here and just kind of roll with the punches as you need to do with X-Men. Nonetheless, the art on this book is classic comic books. Like, Mark Bagley's style has not changed since he did Ultimate Spider-Man way back with Brian Michael Bendis, like issue number 1. So yeah. As you're reading this book, or as I was reading this book, I was like, this is classic. This is classic looking. This is classic modern comics looking. And I really enjoy it for that part of it. But at the same time, the story is okay. They're focusing a lot on Cyclops, and I have a very weird relationship with that character in that I love him, especially the young Cyclops I really enjoy, whereas the old Cyclops is kind of an old curmudgeon. And so now we're seeing like young Cyclops is worried. He's like, I don't want to become that guy. And yet it's his future. Like, he's like, I already saw all the bad shit happen. And as far as I know, there's nothing I can do about it because I'm still here and anything that I do hasn't affected the future. So what now? So it's been a really, really good, I don't know, it was a really good second issue. I'm still on the X-Men train. I'm all brainwashed, drank the Kool-Aid and all that jazz. And that so far, so good. Like, I'm ready to have X-Men back in my life still. So I haven't been swayed yet. But, you know, outside of what we read last week, you know, let's think about what's coming out this week. What are you guys excited for this upcoming week? Would it comics come out on December 23rd this week, yes, right before Christmas?
Yep.
Yeah.
What are you guys excited for, Paul?
Probably no surprise to anybody that's listened to this podcast in the past that Transformers versus G.I. Joe number 10 comes out this week, so that's going to be my pick.
Yeah!
So I've raved about this book enough. Issue 9 came out way back in October, so it's been a while. I need this book back in my life. So issue 9 was kind of a weird off issue. I don't want to say off. It was a fantastic issue, but it was kind of like a standalone story that focused on the history of Destro. Fantastic issue as always,
totally.
But this will be back to the main story, back to the craziness we expect from Transformers versus G.I. Joe.
Well, I don't know what else. As if number 9 wasn't crazy, though. I mean,
oh, it was crazy. I mean, I didn't realize there was going to be the history of Destro went all the way back to the Vikings,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And weird ancient gods. But I'm excited to get back to the main story. I've raved about this book enough. It's hitting all the right buttons for me. Tom Scioli's writing and artwork. It's an amazing thing he does where he is paying homage to Kirby while at the same time pushing himself further. It doesn't feel like he's just copying Jack Kirby's work from the 70s. He's taking all of that and taking the energy and sort of repurposing it for his own type of stories and his own type of comics.
Yeah.
It really does feel like an experimental type of comic. Just see this guy try out new ideas issue to issue.
And yet it's like a Hasbro like licensed comic.
I know.
That's the
yeah.
best.
And that's the way I always sell it to people. It's like it feels punk rock because you have this major corporation, these major franchises that have generated millions of dollars and they're just letting these guys, John Barber and Tom Scioli, do whatever they want on the page. And it just feels so raw and like, you know, I don't want to say cheap, but it has that sort of low budget kind of, we can do anything we want. And apparently Hasbro has no problems letting him go as crazy as they want with this stuff. So,
well, I think this book is selling pretty well. I think we say that as every time. It, you know, this book is not doing bad. Otherwise, it would have been canceled a long time ago.
I think so. I mean, IDW, I think that we've talked about this, I think, in past episodes, but their ability to take, you know, franchise comics or licensed properties and really take them to unique and amazing places. I think this book, and I really like the Gem and the Holograms book a lot for the same reason. It feels like they're just letting the creators go and run wild with these characters that they clearly love, and they're not really worried about keeping a strict corporate polished, you know, uniform style to the books.
Right.
Was Godzilla and Hell IDW as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was another great limited series from them.
Oh, yeah. That was just way, way out there. You know, I actually saw Tom Scioli tweeted something last night like he was doing crayon finishes. Or he posted a picture of his crayon not finishes, but like the pre-work that he did. Yeah, where he did colors all in crayon. I'm like, he's doing these in crayons. I just can't get that out of my mind. Like, there's all the, you know, there's all this crazy tooling and stuff that goes into creating comics in some ways. And yet Scioli has decided to like go to the most minimal level of objects and say, let's just do this with crayons. And I don't know if that's like, I don't think that's bad. I think it's just a really unique approach where anybody else would be doing digital painting or, you know, all these different like high tech things. This is like, to me, the most low tech way to create a comic. And I think it's so amazing to me.
Yeah, I love, I've loved Tom Scioli's stuff before this book came out. He's the reason I picked up the first issue of Transformers versus G.I. Joe. Mm-hmm. And I like, if you should follow him on Twitter, on Tumblr, on his Instagram, because he posts these process pictures. And it's like you said, it's low rent. It's got a handmade punk rock feel to it, which I absolutely love. I'm so glad that he's on a project that's getting him a lot of attention. And he's clearly putting a lot of passion and energy into it. So if you're not reading Transformers versus G.I. Joe, here's yet another plug.
Yeah.
Buy this book.
Yeah. James, what are you excited for this week?
I'm excited for Island. Island number 5 is coming out. Pretty much every time I'm on the show and Island is coming out, Island's going to be my pick.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's kind of an unusual pick just because it's the anthology format, so most of the issues so far have been introducing new stories rather than continuing old ones. So it gets a little tough because sometimes it's a couple months in between stories you kind of go back and read, which is a unique problem for anthologies, but I still really like it. Like I've said before, it gives you a really good taste for a lot of different creators. I'm assuming all working at Image. And it's just always a fun read.
Yeah, I really need to pick this up. I one of those things I keep meaning to go and buy, but kind of that price tag.
Yeah, it's a little pricey, but I mean, it is like a 80-ish page thing. So, I mean, it's a trade-off. True,
yeah. Would you say that this is a series that's exposing you to a lot of artists you probably wouldn't have heard of? Or are there like a lot of like quote-unquote bigger names coming into this book doing work?
No, I mean, pretty much every creative group I've seen there so far, I have not read anything else of them, except for, I think, Brandon Graham. I'm a big fan of his work in general.
There we go, Brandon Graham. He was on Wicked and Divine. That's who it was this week, I think.
I just read that the other day. Brandon Graham is the best, but yeah.
I like Brandon Graham a lot. His name, I think he was one of the guys that kind of, there's kind of his idea to do the anthology. I think he's kind of like editing it or shepherding it in some way.
I think he's like the weird little like blob guy who narrates like the first page of the book every issue.
Yeah.
And Emma Rios works on that too. Who did the art for Pretty Deadly. Doesn't she work as like a coordinator for the collaboration, or am I making things up? Maybe she does the covers.
That's entirely possible.
Okay. Okay. Well, cool. I mean, this is, I feel like I've seen Island. I see it every month at the shop and I'm like, Maybe this week. But then I'm like, I don't know. Maybe it might be something that I pick up, you know, on a whim if Image does a sale and they're like half off and I could just grab a whole backlog of them. I think that would be super cool. Or even just to buy number one at this point, because I'm sure they're slightly discounted because Image is, you know, respects their readers and stuff like that. And that's my criteria. they're willing to discount something, you know, 2 weeks after it comes out. But I've been really meaning to read this, and maybe I should just do it. Maybe I should just take the dive.
So an interesting question. How do you think this is going to get collected if they're already like almost trade paperback-sized issues?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't collect it. Maybe at like issue 10, they do like the big collections, like the omnibuses they do for Walking Dead and Invincible.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine it coming into like putting two or three issues into a hardbound. Right. You know what I mean? That'd be interesting to see, though. I mean, maybe after issue 6, they will release like a large collector edition.
Yeah.
You never know with Image. I think that's one of the cool things about them is like the bizarre things that they'll collect into a big book, like the Private Eye, for instance, which I grabbed in hardback, which is awesome.
I'm jealous.
But anyways, yeah.
I picked that up on his website. You can buy it like pay what you want, and it's DRM free and stuff. So I got both volumes of that for like $1 a piece.
Yeah, I think I paid like $1. I think I paid $5 for the first issue and like $1 for all the subsequent issues, but I was like, I really wanted the physical book, you know, that whole book is just perfect. But anyways, my pick for this week is my new favorite series, I think, called Paybacks. which is, this is the, I think this is the last issue in the first arc. I may be wrong, but so Payback's number 4. Payback's is a series about these people who essentially, I don't remember if I talked about this on another episode, but I'll go through it again nonetheless. So Payback's is about a group of former or current superheroes and supervillains who owe money to this semi-evil person who loans out money to superheroes and supervillains who need it. So, who, you know, the question is, who funds, you know, the Legion of Superheroes base? Well, some random person, and eventually they have to pay those debts back. And when they don't, they send this squad of, you know, people who are in debt out to collect the money from them. And the mystery of the story is someone is murdering these people who owe money to this semi-evil entity before the Payback collectors can actually collect the money. And it features a character who was in another series called Buzzkill. Now that I'm speaking, I feel like I definitely talked about this on another episode.
I believe you did.
Yeah, but nonetheless, this book is amazing, and it's hilarious, and it's the right amount of action and comedy that you want from a book that is all about action and comedy. It's not over the top and in your face and wacky like a Deadpool, but it's not so dark and dry that you won't figure out the joke until two pages later, or the joke just kind of falls flat. Like, everything is very well timed, and the creative team on this book is fantastic. And so I won't go into it too much more, but if you haven't read this book, it's a lot of fun. And if you haven't read Buzzkill, that's another one of those books that if you do buy it and you don't like it, I will refund the money, because it's honestly, like, Mark Waid, you know, if you love Mark Waid, has like praise this book, it Paybacks and Buzzkill. So check that stuff out. It's so good. The real thing I actually wanted to talk to you guys about this week, as every week, I always have something I want to talk to you guys about. I picked up a couple number ones this week. Paul, it looks like you picked up a couple number ones. And James, mm-hmm. I mean, you've got a couple number twos and threes on your list. So the question is, what makes you take a comic, read it the number one or number two, or even number three in some cases, and say, this is going to be on my pull list, this is what I want to keep reading? Like, what does a book have to do in order to hook you so that you'll keep reading an ongoing, or even consider reading a whole mini-series or maxi-series? So, like, for instance, Paul, you said Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur probably isn't going to stay on your list, and mm-hmm. maybe it's just because it's not for you, but is there something that book could have done that would have said, yeah, this is definitely something I want to read?
Well, a good question. That book, I was very curious about it because obviously Devil Dinosaur is one of the more obscure Jack Kirby characters he did when he came back to Marvel in the 70s.
Right.
Admittedly, I've never read much of the Devil Dinosaur Kirby stuff. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things I will get to eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like the idea of there being an all-ages book, and I like the idea of it being a book for, you know, young girls, more or less. You know, the main character is this awkward, you know, elementary, I think she's in sixth grade, elementary school girl,
right,
who is kind of a nerd, kind of ostracized, and then she meets up with Devil Dinosaur. Great concept. But it just didn't work for me, it didn't click for me. I mean, I can't really put my finger on why. Maybe part of it is that I know it's going to feel like a mainstream Marvel book in some sense.
Okay.
There's a revelation that, and spoiler alert, although I think it's been mentioned in the solicitations and stuff at this point, but mm-hmm. Moon Girl is an Inhuman.
Okay.
So it's going to tie into this weird Marvel push for the Inhumans that's going on right now, and that kind of maybe is what turned me off a little bit. And part of me just thinks, you know, if you're going to do a Kirby book, you really have to either do an homage to Kirby or take it somewhere it's never been before,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think it did that for me the way that other Kirby-influenced stuff does. Like, for example, Justice League right now, which I hadn't read Justice League in, you know, years. I'd read the first six issues when the New 52 launched.
Yeah.
Wasn't my cup of tea. When they announced the Darkseid War and I saw it was going to have Mr. Miracle as a main character, that made me jump on the book and made me jump on and start reading it right now, add it to my pull list, because it was a character I cared about, done in a way that I thought was interesting. That's what kind of hooked me, as opposed to Devil Dinosaur.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I mean, I realize there's a lot of, like, context that goes into a question like that, so, but mm-hmm. I mean, there. I feel like there is something that you can maybe generalize about all new number ones or number twos that allow you to say I want to keep reading this. Like, this is so exciting for me that I want to, like, keep continuing. Like, for instance, you know, Weird World number one, I'm willing to give the number two a shot simply because number one was out there enough and they were doing some really interesting things and Mike Del Mundo's art's great and Sam Humphrey's writing was really, like, on point in that issue. So I'm willing to give it a number two. And I mean, honestly, it's like I wasn't turned off in any way. Like, that's a weird way to say it. So I don't know. Maybe I'll let me recollect my thoughts. And James, you're into Klaus right now. What kept you reading that book other than maybe just your love for Grant Morrison?
So Klaus, I would say, you know, Grant Morrison, you got to be in a certain mindset, I think, to really enjoy Grant Morrison. And I went into it kind of expecting to not like it, just because I don't like the super, like, cheesy Christmassy shenanigans. The cover, for one, is really, really awesome. It's Klaus is just standing there with his massive wolf companion, with, like, a
Which I, what is that even him. About? Like,
yeah, he has a giant wolf companion that murders people.
Cool.
And so does Klaus. he's not, like, a peace-loving fat man. He's, like, I'm going to chop your head off and steal all your toys type of guy. So I...
That does not sound like the Santa Claus that I know.
That's exactly why it's so amazing. And I don't want to spoil it, but Claus may or may not take a bunch of mushrooms and accidentally steal all the toys in the town.
Well, again, it is a Grant Morrison comic.
Yeah,
so
you expect a certain amount of drug use. Yeah,
yeah, a little bit.
That's really interesting because one of the things that will get me to buy a number one or even jump on a series is creative teams. I tend to follow creative teams more than characters in some sense these days obviously as a more refined comic book fan than I was as a kid, yeah. You know. And Grant Morrison is one of those guys that I'll pretty much buy anything he does. Mm-hmm. You know, but when he was doing a lot of DC stuff, it was an easy sell because I'm a DC fan at heart. So Grant Morrison writing Batman, no-brainer. Grant Morrison writing Superman, no-brainer.
Yeah.
When I saw that he was doing this Klaus series, I hesitated and I didn't buy it for whatever reason. It's just like, you know, that's a character or maybe an approach that just doesn't work for me. And I have to say, some of the more recent Grant Morrison stuff hasn't grabbed me the way that his DC work did.
Right.
I like The Nameless, but I don't think it's great. I liked Annihilator a lot more than Nameless, actually. He did that Happy miniseries for Image, which I bought. I'm like, hey, Grant Morrison's doing Image comics. You know, he's going to be more creatively open and free, but it didn't work for me the way that his DC stuff did.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something else. It's not only a creative team. It's like, if it clicks. And again, I guess the example we can always go back to on this podcast is I tried to read Lazarus by Greg Rucka and I didn't like it, but I grabbed, you know, Black Magic number one on a whim. I'm like, you know what? I'll give another Greg Rucka book a shot. And I really dug that book because it felt more in line with the things I like about Greg Rucka's writing than Lazarus did.
Gotcha. Yeah. I was going to say, I thought I felt the same way about Happy because I really hadn't read much of Grant Morrison's work outside of the big two. And then I grabbed that book thinking, like, oh, man, this is going to be batshit insane because look at the stuff he's doing at DC. And then it was kind of just a weird little nothing story. Like, the way that it, I don't know, I really was not pleased with that series on the whole. And I was kind of bummed out because the art was fantastic. And really, I felt like the first issue had a real fun kick to it at the end. But by the end of the series, I think it was like four issues long, I was just kind of bummed out. Like, there was no real resolution. And James, if you haven't read that, I'm sorry. You know, go ahead. And, you know, to each their own. But I was not too pleased with it. So,
you know, it's funny. Just on a side note for that book, it kind of makes more sense if you read it as Grant Morrison doing a parody of a Garth Ennis comic. If you read it
okay,
that way,
okay.
It actually makes a lot more sense.
Okay. But what I mean, so then if we're going back and we're looking at, you know, when it comes to big two versus independent books, like, would you say that there is definitely like more of an easier acceptance for okayness in the big two than maybe Image or Boom or Oni Press or any of the independent publishers that are out there?
I think so. I mean, that's kind of the point I was trying to make about the Justice League book that I'm reading right now. It's just the hook for me is the characters and seeing these characters I've always liked in a new context. And it's not the best comic right now, and it's not the greatest, but it's hitting all these notes for me that other books might not, because as good as an Image comic might be, the first issue, I don't have an emotional connection to the characters. Hopefully the first issue will establish that. Mm-hmm. But if I pick up a random issue of Justice League and, you know, Mr. Miracle or Big Barda is in it, these characters that I don't see very often, it's like, whoa, these are characters I love. I'm willing to overlook some questionable craft or maybe a decent, okay story just to see characters I don't see very often.
Gotcha.
So I think it's easier to have that emotional connection. And again, DC's my thing. I'm sure, Mike, you'll buy any new X-Men comic.
I have openly admitted that. That's
exactly.
James, and I think, you know, go ahead.
So I was going to say, James, I think I get the sense that you tend to read more Image and smaller publisher stuff and not so much Big Two stuff. Mm-hmm. Is there a reason for that or just...
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel almost exactly the opposite of the way you feel, Paul. if it's a character that I recognize, I know that there's going to be a lot of stuff about them that I don't know. So I do tend to go more towards the indie side of things.
Okay.
I actually just remembered, I did read a number one last week, Eighth Seal, also by James Tynion IV.
Oh, man. That's 3 for 3 right now, right?
Yeah, wow. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was a really weird number one. Basically, it's the First Lady of the United States, like the president's wife, starts seeing visions of herself becoming a demon and murdering children everywhere.
So, but did it hook you? That's the question. I mean...
the reason I brought it up is because I don't think it did hook me. I thought the horror imagery was really cool when she was seeing kind of visions of herself, going all demon mode and stuff. But at the end, it kind of revealed that she's like, oh, it's the First Lady of the President, and, you know, she's just a big political figure, and they're going to draw all this stuff in. And I felt like it was too much of a twist. I kind of just wanted her to be like just some normal lady.
wait. Are you saying that we're trying to read comics for normalcy right now? Is that like...
Yeah, I need some realism in my independent comics, Mike.
Okay. Well, hey, I heard that Giant Days is pretty good, although I've never read any of it, but it's supposed to be slice of life or something. I don't know. But, sorry. Well, so I'm thinking about this and I'm wondering, you know, I feel like I'm kind of the same way. I'm really, really hit or miss, and like two books could be written about the exact same thing, and like one book might sell it and the other might not, and it's it's really hard to almost nail down this idea, which has got to just be killer for creators in comics right now to say, you know, how do I, like, what beats do I have to hit to hook people? And it's utterly unpredictable, or maybe I'm just not seeing a big enough picture. Do you guys feel the same way? Like, if you look at a number one, you can like tell from the get-go that like this isn't going to work, or does it like take a while, maybe a second reread, to really make you reevaluate? Mm-hmm. Or would you say that I maybe there's even like, if someone that you respect likes a book, you're more likely to like it? There's a million billion factors that go into it. Like, do you ever consider any of that when you're like, I really like this book, or I really don't like this book?
You know, I find myself, in terms of number ones, especially from smaller publishers, I'm willing to give them a chance. And again, a lot of these books, it's interesting to see how Image is having number ones, oversized number ones, giving the creative team enough time to establish the story, establish the tone of the book, and more often than not, have a big sort of cliffhanger hook at the end that's going to grab you. I think Paper Girls number one is a good example of that. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, if you look at the smaller publishers, the bigger publishers, like the Big Two, they don't have that luxury. A number one is going to be 20 pages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's very rare they do an oversized number one and have it be the same price point.
Yeah.
So
you can pay $6 for 34 pages. I mean, hey.
Sure. Yeah. But that's where I think the emotional connection to a character you have a history with makes it easier to sell one of those books. It's like a Martian Manhunter. You know, I was already sold on that book given the character, and luckily the number one kind of hooked me, and number two is kind of even better. So it's interesting to see how a book, the chances a creative team has to take when selling you a book from the Big Two, there's a lot more expectations. If you're doing an Image book, chances it could be oversized, and chances are you already have the whole story planned out, right? And or it's a mini series, it's like the number one's already sort of established the story for you. As far as the structure goes, I kind of have this thing where I'm annoyed when a book has an obvious cliffhanger ending.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's where you turn the page and they're like, it turns out I was a demon the entire time. Like, what?
It's, all right. Well, I have to have more than that to pick up issue two.
Yeah.
Right? I have to care about the characters enough for that hook to be, well, okay, I just need to have the, I need to, it's not enough to say, I need to buy issue two to get the punchline. It's like, I need to buy issue two to see what happens to this person I'm invested in. That's my approach.
Right. Let's switch gears a little bit then, and think about it this way. I mean, so what if you're trying to jump into a long-running series? And this doesn't necessarily mean Big Two. You know, you could look at something like a Savage Dragon or a Spawn or, say, even Archie, right? Even old-school Archie before they did the renumbering. You know, what would it take for a book like that to hook you, to keep you reading? Say you read a trade that you lend, you're lended from a friend, and you're like, wow, this was really good, and there's a lot of history and context, but you want to keep reading it. Like, where do you think the level is there? Is it just like the unique take on something that you're slightly familiar with, or is it that like the history is understandable enough that you don't necessarily need to go back and read 400 issues or you know, something to try to catch up? Is there something there that you could say like is tangible that you could nail down? Really big, weird questions this week. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Yeah.
Well, for me, I don't like jumping into any book really in the middle of things. And I know that's like what comic books are trying to sell right now. But like when I was trying to get into X-Men, Mike, I asked you, where should I start? Where's like, where's the middlest place to start? That's not all the way back there. And Grant Morrison.
And I said 15 years ago, man. Like,
yeah, Grant Morrison, X-Men. Yeah. And that got me hooked, and now I'm kind of sold on X-Men. I might give the entire series a try, but I know that's going to take 100 years to get there.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. But so even something like Constantine, for instance, like we're looking at a new renumbering, example. Right? I mean, let's jump into a big two book just because it's easy. But Constantine has a lot of history to it. As for him as a character, and so you look back and you go, well, do you want to read all the Swamp Thing stuff that led up to it? Do you want to read all of Hellblazer? Do you want to just jump into this new number one? I guess, like, is there a level of, this is something I know we always talk about, especially when I'm bringing up X-Men, like that, a number of punches you're willing to take where you just go, I don't really know what that means, but I'll roll with it because the story isn't about that little side thought, but it's about like a greater thing. Like, does a specific trade story arc, or can a specific trade story arc sell you well enough to keep you reading an ongoing, like, long-running book?
Yeah. I'm trying to put into words what it is about
it. Yeah, totally. You know, no, take your time, man.
You know, we talk about, I think the idea of it being a creative team that grabs me, more or less, you know, because the only X-Men stuff I've really read that stuck with me is the Grant Morrison stuff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that has to do with him and Frank Quitely on art. That was just an interesting take on those characters. And the other X-Men stuff I've tried to read since then just feels like, oh, they got cold feet. You know, after like Grant Morrison is like, well, we can't go that far. Let's go back to what's safe.
Yeah.
Another example, again, going back to Grant Morrison, because that's a guy who I pretty much pick up anything.
Yeah.
His Doom Patrol run. I happened to grab a few issues of his Doom Patrol run, just random issues, out of a dollar bin, and so I read those. I'm like, well, this is great, and then went and tracked down the whole, I think it's like a 45-issue run that he did.
Yep, yeah, it's like 19 to 63. You know? I was just looking at that the other day. Yeah. I might sit down and read that like over New Year's or something.
And again, it was just one of those things. Like, those are characters I was interested in, but knew almost nothing about the Doom Patrol. Mm-hmm. You know, such an obscure group. Mm-hmm. And just his approach to the characters, the artwork itself, and that's something else that we haven't mentioned yet, but artwork will grab me. Even if it's a mediocre story, great artwork will grab me and probably get me to buy number two.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially the cover art on number ones. Like, I hate to be a sucker for a good cover, but it gets me pretty much every single time.
Well, that's the idea, and it's interesting to see. You know, I'm a big buff for comic book history, and you look at back in the old days when they had to sell a lot of comics, you had to grab new readers and kids. Mm-hmm. The cover was what told the story. You look at those old covers, and there's word balloons, and the story of the issue is being told right on the cover, and it wanted to make you buy it. And nowadays, the cover is just a striking image, you know? And a lot of times, for the big two at least DC, that's one of my big pet peeves, the covers don't tell you anything about the inside of the comic. It's just a cool, you know, like pinup shot.
Except for they you might know? Be like us, or what is it? They're not, they're like, not us. Like us. Yes, they
yeah.
are.
They're not like us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's my that's my favorite thing right now. This comes up. I feel like Nick and I always go back and forth on it about the cover of the book being the first panel of the comic. Mm-hmm. It's so yeah. cool. It's not like like the classic style, like Paul was saying, where there's like word balloons trying to sell you on the book. It's just, here's the first thing that happened in this book. And even if like for like the last two issues, there's been like a continuing story between the issue ends and then the next issue starts and there's a beat and that's it. Mm-hmm. It's not like the next day or the end of a scene. And so to see that cover image be the next beat after you finish the previous issue just blows my mind. Like, I absolutely eat that shit up.
Yeah. And
that's a cool trick, and it's hard to pull off.
Yeah.
That series specifically, I just went back and started rereading it, and what kept me buying those and just sitting on those, I think 7-8-ish is where I kind of started sitting on them. Some of those covers really brought me back in, especially there was one with Misery Kid, I remember, that I was like, oh, Misery Kid must be becoming like a main character now. And I thought he was a really interesting concept, like bringing the misery out of people and enjoying suffering and all that. So that's what kept me buying the book. And ultimately, I'm satisfied with that decision.
Yeah.
You know, another point I want to bring up real quick here is kind of out of left field, but
go for
the difference between buying a being hooked on a monthly book, and something I'm finding myself doing more and more is willing to wait for a trade or a collection, which normally something I would never do. I don't usually read trades or trade weight. I buy single issues.
Yeah.
But more and more with the big two, and especially Image, more series are designed to be limited series or be broken up into volumes, and it makes it easier or more tempting to wait. Like Klaus, for example. I didn't pick up the first issue, but it's one of those things like, yeah, when that comes out in the collection, I'll pick it up.
Right.
I don't feel the need to buy it month to month.
Yeah.
And even more stuff from the big two, especially Marvel, I like the new Vision series that just started. That sounds really interesting, the reviews I've read of it, but I'm not going to buy the single issues at $3.99 a pop when it's collected, the you know however long it ends up being. I don't think it's going to be an ongoing series. I think it'll just be, it's designed to be a mini. I'll buy the collection.
Paul
you know?
Has no faith for Marvel's all new, all different.
Call, you know, I got to say, Mike, I want to be more into Marvel, but their constant renumbering is a big turnoff for
me. Oh, dude, don't even get me started, man. Yeah.
But do you find yourself doing that too now? Even though you're a big Marvel fan, do you find yourself maybe being more tempted to wait for trades or collections?
That's like such a weird thing, because usually if I see a book and I go, this number one didn't sell me, I'll usually forget about it and then maybe collect it in a sale, or you know, because a lot of Marvel books I don't even try physical anymore. I'm like, why waste the space on a book like that unless they've got a really cool cover?
Yeah.
And so I usually will like snag a number one, like Weird World I had no intent on buying, so I snagged it on Comixology and I was like, let's see if it's any good. It's okay. Like I said, I'm gonna probably try number two, but at the end of the day, chances are I'll probably not be into the series, but maybe collect it in trade if there's something really good that happens in the end, or I see some like really positive reviews about the story arc. But yeah, I guess I would say that I am more likely to do that, but a lot of times I have to have, if I'm hooked on a Marvel book, I usually just buy it flat out. Like this Daredevil run, I'm hooked on it. And unless it peters out, I'm just going to stop buying singles. But there's nothing, like the only books that I'd really consider probably buying in trade right now is the all new Hawkeye stuff. Because I'm really interested to see what Jeff Lemire is doing with that book. And the art on that book looks really, really good. But I just am not into, I was so like just burnt out on Hawkeye after waiting so long for the Fraction and AHA run to end, that I was just like, man, fuck you. I can't even support this because I'm so mad about it. But maybe I'll grab it in trade if I can find it for a like reasonable price of like, you know, $12 or $15. I don't know. It's tough. But, you know, I'm actually more likely to do that, though, with Vertigo and DC books, where I'm like, I don't want to read this ongoing because I can't keep track of the characters in my head because I'm just not that in love with these characters like I am with Marvel. But I do want to read them. I just want to read them all in a go. So like when Forever Evil came out, I really wanted to read that book, actually. I was very interested in the idea of the supervillains, but I didn't want to buy it you know, in single issues, because I would have lost it, like, month to month. I would have not been able to track it. So buying it in trade was, like, the best decision I could have made, because I read that all in a sitting, and each issue ended, and I was, like, fist pumping in the air. I apparently do that a lot when I'm reading by myself. And I was really excited. Like, it was, like, 2 in the morning, and I was reading this book. I was like, I should go to bed, but I got 2 issues left. And it was so exciting because I was just reading it all in a go. And to your point, Paul, I think a lot of books are meant to be read that way. It's just we are in this serialized system of month to month, the book's got to be out. The book's got to be out because there are fans out there who need it or really demand it because they're so used to that formula. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but it does bear to note that some books are meant to be read in a collected edition, even if they are coming out serialized. Injection, for instance, is one of those books. I'll say that. Warren Ellis has said time and time again that this is a serialized graphic novel, and I think he probably could have done better by just releasing it all as a graphic novel, but got to get people paid, you know, and month-to-month works. So for the time being, at least.
Yeah, that's a whole other topic, maybe for another episode. I notice that more and more books being designed for trades, which kind of rubs me the wrong way. And even I see it happening in the Netflix series, like Daredevil and Jessica Jones. Like, well, this was clearly written to be like a 13-hour long movie.
Yeah,
they just arbitrarily split up into hour segments, you know. But that's a whole other topic.
Actually, like, kind of brings up an interesting question of how do you hook someone on a graphic novel? I know we've touched on this many, many times, but how do you sell someone on a graphic novel without attaching a big name to it? Because I feel like original graphic novels are one high price point to throw people into, and two, like. Yeah. You're investing a lot of money in a thing that might not be good, which is why like serialized comics work really well, because what's $3 or $4 to you, and rather than, you know, 20 or 30. So it's like a heavy back and forth, because like, yeah, we're like, these books should be graphic novels or should just be all contained in a collection, but they're really hard to sell to people. And I guarantee you that if a lot of books switched over to that, you'd see a desperate drop in numbers, just because people, you know, it's one of those things where, like, yeah, you're spending $30 over, you know, 6 weeks, but instead you could spend 20 in 1 week. It's like there's that measurement of money where you're like, well, I'm spending too much on this thing. It's like a whole economics problem. So do you guys have any thoughts on, like, what would make that easier for people? Maybe, like, installment plans? I don't know.
Well, the hook there for me is always the creator. And when I think of OGNs, I think of people that are, you know, artist, writer combined. They're doing it on their own. It's something that they crafted, and it's important to them. That's why they're releasing it as a complete story, you know? And that's what I'm attracted to, is this idea that this is something, a story that was so important to the person making it that they invested all their time and energy, and that's going to be worth my $15 or $20 to read it. And it's going to be something that I want on my shelf that I can pull at any time and maybe share with somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's an investment. And maybe that's kind of the secret, the way I think about things too. If it's a book that I'm just curious about, I can wait for it to show up at the library. If it's a book I'm curious about, want to read, and maybe share with someone else, I'll buy the trade. The best example I can think of is the Andre the Giant biography that Box Brown did. I knew nothing about Box Brown. Yeah, and it's such a good book. I knew nothing about his work. I love wrestling. I love Andre the Giant. I flipped through a couple pages like, all right, this artwork is fantastic. It's something that I know I'm going to enjoy. I know friends of mine who maybe aren't big comic fans, they're going to enjoy it because they like wrestling. So that was my impetus for picking it up.
Yeah. That's, you know, that's really cool. And that's actually a great point. Like, a topic about an original graphic novel can sell someone in a way like that. Yeah. And I think that is still pretty tough to do, you know, unless if you're tying back to something like, for instance, Andre the Giant, like you said, like, yeah, that's got a lot of name recognition to begin with. That's going to tap into a community that maybe didn't read comics in the first place, but it's also going to get exposure for someone like Box Brown. If it does well, then you can go out and do something like an Entity Observes. And since, you know, I think, Paul, you said you picked that book up, and I think that that's probably a direct result of, you know, the Andre the Giant story, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was just, you know, it was the hook of Andre the Giant, the theme of the book was the hook that got me to buy it. Box Brown's artwork and his writing is what kept me interested in him as a creator. And at this point, it's like, well, anything he does, I'm willing to invest in and buy. Just not only for myself, but also to support him, because obviously he's publishing on a much smaller scale.
Right.
It doesn't have the sort of backing that a big two book would have. And that's the way I try to think of it. A buying a trade or an OGN by a single creator like that is like you saying, I enjoy your work and I want to support it monetarily.
Right.
Rather than saying, I'm buying this monthly comic for my entertainment.
Right. James, so do you have any like, do you have any experience in doing anything like this? Like where, you know, just finding an original graphic novel and picking it up rather because of some recognition or just because you said, this looks cool. Like, or, is there anything that's hooked you like that?
I guess a good example would be Hip Hop Family Tree. Because I'm really interested in like the history of music and everything. And the art was really cool, kind of like that old school style. And I heard that it was pretty much an encyclopedia of what happened. That's what brought me into that.
Yeah.
Most OGNs, I guess I would say I'm very hesitant to buy unless I know the creators. Or if the cover looks cool and it's like half off on Comixology or something, then I'll give almost anything a try.
Yeah. Sales will do that to you, man. Totally.
Tell me about it.
I mean, and for me, I think I have a weird thing where I'm willing to try an original graphic novel, but it's really got to be something that's like mind-blowingly crazy. I'm looking over at my shelf right now, and I can't say I have too many that are not by creators that I've already like read work from. You know, like Brian Lee O'Malley's Seconds. I think if someone had pitched that to me, had I not known who he was, I might not have grabbed it.
Yeah, totally.
I do really like his art.
Go get it.
Regardless, like when I saw Scott Pilgrim, I was like, oh man, this is really cool art. And I had no idea what Scott Pilgrim was. And maybe I would have been sold on that. But like a lot of stuff I have, like some weird Matt Kent stuff. I've got a thing by like this weird World War II story that's by... what's his name? The guy that wrote the zombie. Oh my goodness, I'm losing it. either way, I've got some like random one offs, but for the most part, they're all like known creators or collected editions of, you know, books that I know were pretty well done, like The Great Pacific and things like that. So, but I do really enjoy that, you know, that feeling of a collected edition, knowing that you're getting that full story. And I know this is totally way off the topic that we were originally talking about, but that is something that I think hooks you into buying or trade waiting for a book, saying I'm getting this in collected edition just because I want to get full chunks of a story at a time rather than going month to month. I think that's like a whole balance we as comic readers have probably, even if you're not even buying them, if you're even just going to the library and getting them, that's a whole thing too. Because like I don't even know what the wait time is for libraries because I can't imagine they get them the date that they come out, but... I don't know. Paul, you're probably a little bit more familiar than that than me.
Yeah, I'm kind of a junkie for my local library, graphic novel and comic book section. I sort of discovered what depth that they had as far as older stuff. And, you know, it's only maybe 2 months wait period between something coming out and it's showing up on the library shelf in the new book section. So that's not too long to wait. And a lot of times I'm willing to do that. And if it's something that grabs me, I'll go check out other work by that same creator.
Right.
The library really is a great way, and I'll make this a PSA for your local public library.
Yeah.
Go check out the comic book section. You might be surprised what they have. It's a great way to check out a variety of stuff, and my goal now is to go in and grab stuff by creators I've never read, maybe artwork that isn't normally my cup of tea, just to try stuff out.
Yeah.
Totally risk-free.
There you go.
Thanks for listening to the I Read Comic Books podcast, a production of Destroy the Cyborg. This episode was produced by Mike Rappin and edited by Xander Riggs. This week's music was brought to you by Metaform, Glenn Porter, and Infinity Shred. If you're listening to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, we'd love it if you would take a quick moment to rate us. Your comments and ratings help others find the show, and also let us know how we're doing. Otherwise, if you just want to say hi, you can email the show at cyborg@destroythecyb.org. Each email we get means a lot to us and lets us interact with all of you out there. Maybe you started reading a book we suggested. Maybe you have a book to suggest to us. If email's not your game, feel free to shoot us a message on Twitter @destroythecyb or through the hashtag IReadComicBooks. You can also follow us on Tumblr @destroythecyborg and check out our subreddit at ireadcomicbooks.reddit.com. And as always, thank you for listening.
All right, now let's just spoil all of Star Wars. That's what I want to do for the last, 10 minutes of this. No.
And if Xander hasn't seen it, he has to listen to it.
Exactly. He's going to, unless he's going to cut this whole thing out. I mean, this is still part to tell you, but I meant to say that I bought Judge Dredd number one, but I haven't read it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm going to. That cover is too beautiful.
I know. I'm going to buy it too, just because of the cover.
I'm going to probably grab it on Comixology. And I mean, if I like it, I'll probably try to keep up with it or maybe do like trades or something. But that cover, I've seen it like 3 times this week and I'm just like, oh, it's like fantastic.
The Ulysses Farinas cover with like the big Judge Dredd head.
I'm thinking of the one that's like I think it's the regular cover where it's just like the Stone Mountain like face.
Yeah. I actually got the Archie variant for Judge Dredd number one. Yeah. So it's Judge Dredd in the background and there's Archie on like a hoverboard like in front of him.
That's awesome.
It's Francesco Francavilla. Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Dude, I think I saw you took a picture of that. That's pretty fantastic.
Yeah. I dug it. You have to let me know what you think. Judge Dredd's one of those characters that I think is kind of like an acquired taste. Like I think it's great, and then I know my brother was reading some older Judge Dredd stuff and it didn't click for him, so yeah.
How do you feel about that versus like the movie? Like the more recent one.
The more recent one? It's interesting because I started reading old Judge Dredd right around the same time that I saw the movie. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know much about the character. Mm-hmm. I really liked the Dredd movie, but the more Judge Dredd I read, particularly the older stuff from the 70s and 80s, the comics are a lot more satirical and funny, and there's no humor in that movie at all.
No.
You know, and I'm like, they didn't really capture the spirit of the comics.
I feel like there's a lot of humor in that movie that wasn't, like, it's not, like, planned jokes. It's just, it's just funny because of the way that the lines are delivered and, like, the timing of them. I don't know.
Yeah.
I felt like I was laughing my ass off throughout that whole movie, but.
Yeah. I like the movie. I would like to see them do. You know, it's funny. When I was watching Mad Max Fury Road, there's a lot of sequences where I'm like, well, fuck, this is the Judge Dredd movie they need to make. Because there's a whole Judge Dredd story where they go to the irradiated wasteland that is America, and they're driving these giant rigs, you know, in a convoy across this atomic wasteland. I'm like, well, that's Mad Max. You know, that's the same movie.
Judge Dredd.
Judge Dredd.
The law.
Definitely.
He really is the law.
He really is.